The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition today. This ain't rock and roll, this is Genoa sides as Samp dump Diversa and Sheva gets the shover at Genoa. Ligue 1, like number 10, with a runaway leader who lies first and a big case of Bordeaux in the cellar. Bundesliga, Dortmund rocking to Haaland quotes as Erling tells them, I can't go for that. And Spain, the Super Cup in Saudi and the madness in Seville. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hey, listener. No idea what day of the week it is for you, but we're sat here on a Monday afternoon, 17th of January, as it happens. And I've got James Horncastle here. Hey, James.
Hello, everyone.
Alvaro Romeo's with us.
Hello, guys.
Some fresh Julien Laurens.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Woo. A little bit later on, we'll be hearing from Christoph Biermann. Tell you who's not with us. Raphael Honigstein. Yeah, it's a big week for getting rid of Rafa's. And this one, Honigstein, as you may have seen his announcement on social media Monday, that he's taking a little break from working for The Athletic until June to focus on another project. Well, I wonder what that
he
might
said,
be.
He said, it's not me, it's you, Jimbo.
It's you.
It's you. Yeah.
Did he say that? Damn. All right.
What other Rafa could get sacked this week?
Where?
Rafael Nadal, first round of the Australian Open. Beam, out.
Okay.
If you went through, my friend.
Get out. Okay, second round. Rafael.
Right.
Rafael Leao gets sent off against Spezia for me.
Yeah, right. Rafael That's Guerrero Monday. On the transfer list because he's too close to Haaland and they put pressure on them to decide what to do.
Right. Rafe Fiennes? I don't know. Anyway, that's probably enough. Rafa's getting binned. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, by the way, why not get on social media and say happy birthday to James Horncastle?
Yeah.
It's still Monday for us, though. So he's still whatever age he was before he had that birthday. And loads of games still haven't happened in Serie A, which is a bit confusing. But we'll get onto all of that later on. Let's talk about the stuff that has happened. And, kick off with a moment of the weekend with Paddy Power. What do you think, Jules? Do you want to lead off?
Yes, it will have to be the 6-0 defeat from Bordeaux away at Rennes on Sunday, the heaviest defeat in the league since 1986. They have the lowest tally of points since 1959-60 when they were relegated. It's a disastrous season. Petkovic, as the manager, some players have been expelled from the first team, like Laurent Koscielny, the club captain, because the club is not happy with him and his investments, so they say. So it's just a terrible car crash at the moment, and that 6-0 defeat just added even more pressure on the whole situation.
Crazy that the bottom two in Ligue 1 at the moment is Bordeaux and Saint-Étienne. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. All right. More on Ligue 1 to come. James Horncastle.
Well, I think we have to go to Saturday night in Turin. Paulo Dybala, who was fresh from sort of being told, Paulo, you know that new contract we promised you? Well, we're going to take it off the table and maybe come back to you in April.
Che si avvicina ai 25 metri. Poi Kane, attenzione, il rimpallo e il vantaggio da parte della Juventus con l'inserimento proprio di Paulo Dybala, che ha quasi un'esultanza rabbiosa.
He scored a goal, his fourth in his last six games, and he said he was looking in the stands for a friend who'd invited. I mean, whether that meant he's got no friends on the Juventus board, I don't know. But it seemed that his stare was very much directed at Pavel Nedved. Pavel Nedved, who's, you know, you see ice cold with those kind of glacial blue eyes. But even he seemed kind of flustered by being stared
hives.
At in that way.
Yeah. No, seriously, you can see him literally developing hives at, you know, in real time in front of your eyes because the director cuts to him there after Dybala, who's normally so sweet and mild-mannered, unleashed this kind of weapons-grade Paddington stare at him. And now it's all out in the open, how Inter want to lure him away at the end of the season. Crikey. All right, looking forward to digging deep into that story and much more besides. Alvaro, what about your moment of the weekend?
It has to be Real Madrid winning the Super Cup by beating Athletic Club Bilbao in the final 2-0, and Real Madrid getting a taste of silverware for the first time in 18 months, more or less, because they had the trophyless 2021, and also a big victory for Carlo Ancelotti too, because you know, after being at Napoli, being at Everton, not winning titles in there, it was, I think, that an special time for Carlo Ancelotti too. And if he wins La Liga this year, the only trophy he's got left to win with Real Madrid, he will become, I think, the first manager in football history to win the big five leagues as a manager. So yeah, it was a very refreshing week for Real Madrid at the expense of Barcelona first and then Athletic Club Bilbao.
Wow, all of the big five. Good Lord.
Yeah.
That'd be extraordinary.
Yeah, he's won them all.
Not La Liga.
I bet Carlo right now is thinking, if only I'd stayed at Everton. You know, I mean, when Madrid came in for me and said, do you want to come back? And I just loved my time on Merseyside. I mean,
yeah. Well, if he wants, you can always go back because there's an opportunity there. Mm. All right, well, much to discuss, and let's begin with Sunday night in Saudi.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18 plus, BeGambleAware.org.
Vamos a acabar la pelota, cross, perdona, en contra del Madrid. Ahí va Rodrigo, se mete en el área. Juega Modric, chuta Modric. Gol, 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 gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol.
Ooh, Luka Modric there with a very special goal to open the scoring in the Spanish Super Cup final because of the new format. As Real Madrid saw off Athletic Bilbao, the second goal coming from the penalty spot by Karim Benzema.
Karim the dream!
Thank you very much.
Was expecting that.
But yeah, it wasn't a patch on the first goal by 36-year-old Luka Modric. Ooh, Alvaro.
We've been saying that the whole season. He is phenomenal. And he's not only, you know, the best midfielder in the world at that age, or from his age bracket, to put it better, but he's still one of the best midfielders in the world. He can overrun anybody. He scores beautiful goals when it matters. And he sets the style of Real Madrid. And with or without the ball, he's always, you know, rolling up his sleeves and making sure that he makes a sacrifice for the team. So he was excellent again. He was good against Barcelona as well. Maybe against Barcelona he didn't touch the ball so much. But generally speaking, yes, a win for Real Madrid. Funnily enough, it was the first time that Real Madrid beat Athletic Club Bilbao in a one-game final. There were five finals before this one, all of them in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s from the last century. And Real Madrid never beat Athletic de Bilbao in a one-game final. But yes, it was a title for Real Madrid. The game was decided in fine margins, probably, because there were three handball incidents in the boxes. All of them, they were rightly called by the referees. With VAR, without VAR, there was no controversy in there, but yes, there were marginal wins thanks to the handballs, and then Real Madrid showed their quality when it came to having the chances. Raúl García missed the penalty when the scoreline was 2-0 already for Real Madrid, but I think that Athletic may have had a small chance to get into the game again, and Real Madrid didn't miss their chances, and they didn't do it either against Barcelona, showing that they are ready, I don't know if for the biggest stages of European football or the biggest nights in European football, a.k.a. Liverpool, Manchester City, Bayern, but I think that in Spain they have shown this week again why they are leading La Liga table and why they are probably the strongest Spanish team in the Champions League.
Very sporting summary there of the game from you, Alvaro, because of course your heart was with the opposition, Athletic Club de Bilbao, who were hoping to retain the Super Cup after last year's triumph over Barcelona and after that emotional semi-final win over Atletico de Madrid with the wonderful scenes of the Williams brothers and their mother after the final whistle.
Yes, that was beautiful. That was very nice because if you know the story of Iñaki Williams and his family, well, his family had to jump a wall in Ceuta and Melilla just to get to Spain, to cross the Spanish border. And Iñaki Williams is a mentor for his brother Nico as well, to the point that when Nico was given his finalist medal after losing to Real Madrid, Nico just took it off. I think that was a mistake due to his youth. And Iñaki Williams just beckoned him did a gesture to him, like, put it back again, and Nico put it back again. So, you know, I think that these guys are dignifying Athletic Club Bilbao, and generally speaking, I am kind of happy with the new generation of players that is coming up at Athletic Club Bilbao, with Vencedor and Nico Williams and Sanzet being probably the best of them, but also then Aguirre Zabala, the goalkeeper, or Serrano, or Zarraga, or Vivian. I think that they are going to establish themselves in the first team. And I wouldn't like to lose perspective. I think that we have lost a lot of finals in the last years. In fact, we have lost 4 finals in the last 13 months. But wow. this is a very successful period in our history. Maybe we haven't had the titles, but definitely we have been very close to winning them. So I think that we have to take the positives.
Absolutely. That means you've been in 5 finals in a similar period of time, which is extraordinary stuff. I must admit, when I did see Nico Williams taking off the medal, I wondered if it was in any way because he felt a little bit uncomfortable with all the Saudiness of it.
I don't know if I would go that far. I think he was just probably not happy with having lost the final, really.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. How many years is it now that this has been in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia? Is it 2 years?
Well, it would have been 3. Haven't had COVID-19. Because last year we had to play it in Sevilla. But this all started in January 2020. And it was a little bit pitiful, I would say, and inexplicable that Rubiales, the chairman of Spanish FA, told to Cadena Ser last Thursday that bringing the Spanish Super Cup to Saudi Arabia was a step towards the integration of women in society. Because I think the next question by the reporters should have been why, and that question never came. So why is that a step forward, for the women's rights and all that. So we have been playing it in Saudi Arabia, and we're going to keep on playing it in Saudi Arabia. And with the current format, pretty much is guaranteed that Real Madrid and Barcelona will be playing it always, every single year, because 4 teams are qualified, and Real
like
Madrid
Super
and Barcelona.
League.
Yeah, we're wondering, like James and I, if you're going to introduce a group stage maybe before the semi-finals of the Super Cup. Something to consider, maybe.
But to be honest with you, without this format, we wouldn't have won it last year. So I don't like this format.
So you like the Saudis now, yeah?
No, from the genesis, from the beginning of it, I was opposed to the format.
Right.
But the truth is that we have won a tournament thanks to this format.
And also,
what can I say?
Thank you, Saudi Arabia.
Thank you, Saudi Arabia. or the
Spanish FA for creating a tournament like this.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? Using the Super Cup as a sports watching exercise for a vile repressive regime. It wasn't even the biggest cup controversy this week in Spain, was it, Alvaro? Because that honour goes to the Copa del Rey derby in the last 16. Between Betis and Sevilla. Wow. Okay, first off, a couple of incredible goals to get this game underway. Amazing atmosphere there at Betis's Benito Villamarín Stadium. Papu Gomez. Oh, we miss him. But he didn't miss. Incredible hit to give Sevilla the lead away at their rivals. And then, how about Betis's equaliser?
It was extraordinary. It was Nabil Fekir who scored it. It was a goal olímpico because he scored it from a corner kick. You know that it's called goal olímpico because Cesario Onzari, the Argentinian player in 1924, scored a goal from a corner kick against the current Olympic champions, Uruguay. And Fekir scored a beautiful one. He's probably the best left foot in La Liga now that Messi's gone. And he's been doing things like this day in, day out in La Liga. He's been very impressive for Betis, and well done to Betis for having extended his contract for many years. I think until he's going to stay there for 3-4 more years, definitely, if he's spending the length of his contract at Sevilla. So well done for the team. And yes, then after the goal of Fekir, then all the controversy happened, and it was very, very sad to see that.
Sevilla's Juan Jordan then gets hit on the head by, how would you describe it? A little bit of PVC, a little bit of kind of plastic piping?
Yeah, it was the plastic stick that holds the, the supporting flag.
Thrown by one of the Betis fans, presumably, from the stands, and the game gets suspended until the next day.
Yeah, I think that the game should have been given to Sevilla, to be honest. I think that it shouldn't have been played on Sunday because you know, it doesn't matter how bad the heat is for Joan Jordan, and this is totally subjective because from outside it looks like it's not a big one. At the end of the day, it's a piece of plastic and it's a hollow stick. But who knows? Joan Jordan apparently didn't feel too good minutes after he got that hit. He went to the hospital on Saturday after the game, and he was diagnosed with a small concussion, a traumatismo cráneo encefálico, it's called in Spanish. It's like a small concussion. Probably it's nothing big, but still, and his tension was quite high, according to the medical report. Meaning
his
that
blood pressure.
Blood pressure, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he went through a pressurizing moment, definitely. So my whole point here is that the game was rightly suspended. Probably when something gets thrown at the pitch, the players have to leave. That's the safest thing to do. Because from the moment that something gets thrown on the pitch, the player doesn't feel safe. Doesn't feel safe, cannot probably exert their activity to the fullest, because you know there is hostility coming from the stands towards you. So my point here is that the game should have never been played again. The victory should have been for Sevilla, because Sevilla couldn't line up Joan Jordan the day after, and this already distorts a little bit the competitiveness of this game. And everything that happened after the game, the way Sevilla and Betis handled that, was a little bit disgusting too. I mean, Lopetegui spoke on Sunday. He was very angry at the Betis fans. He was very angry at Betis, the club. He did a very unfortunate analogy, saying that we can't be sensitive with sexual offences to women, but not with this. I mean, I see the point that we have to be sensitive to a player getting hit, but that analogy probably was totally out of order. Then there is a video caption of the business director of Betis just mimicking Joan Jordan with his mates in the street. Guardado, probably you have seen this video, the Mexican player who is 34 or 33 already. He was doing a bottle pantomime just to...
Yeah,
to
mock. I mean, just to say for anyone who didn't, the game was restarted from the 39th minute, yeah, and Betis then take the lead through Sergio Canales, and in the celebration of that goal, which eventually gave them the win, Andrés Guardado throws a plastic bottle against his own head and then pretends to faint.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Guardado did. And Guardado has been playing football for over a decade in Spain. So, you know, if anyone should set an example, it's a player like him, who I believe that he is kind of involved as well in charities, and he's got also like a very good human profile, I would say, but I don't understand why the Mexican player did that, or I do understand why, but I think that it was totally out of order as well. Then Camarasa and Tello in social media, they were condemning the incident, yes, but they were raising suspicions about Jordan's integrity, if he was maybe acting, you know. So all that was totally unnecessary. Betis went through because Canales scored the winning goal for Betis on Sunday, 24 hours after the game started. And yeah, Betis went through, but this leaves a very bad precedent, because we have seen games being suspended for various reasons, and maybe this game should have been cancelled and given to Sevilla, because, you know, someone at Betis stands just made this game unsafe. And Sevilla, ultimately, was probably the team that suffered most from it.
I see. Well, yes, so they go out of the Copa del Rey. There's more matches coming up in that competition, one of which indeed sees your Athletic Club de Bilbao hosting Barcelona again.
I think that Barcelona saw a really good image against Real Madrid. Not enough to beat Real Madrid, but the game went to the extra time. And you can see that there is an improvement there and some positives, like, for example, Ansu Fati coming back, Pedri coming back. They both didn't look too sharp, but Ansu Fati scored and Pedri played very well the 40, 45 minutes that he played. And Athletic Club Bilbao, they just have to believe that, you know, reaching another final is possible. I think that the winning mentality is the key here. I mean, you have to move forward. You know that you beat Atlético de Madrid. You know that you lost against Real Madrid, not in a bad fashion. And Barcelona is kind of doable. So why not to think that Athletic Club Bilbao can go through?
Absolutely. Well, it's Thursday that they face the Catalans. Also that day, Elche will be playing Real Madrid. And on Wednesday, Atletico Madrid face Real Sociedad for a place in the quarterfinals. Ooh. Next up, let's hear about the Bundesliga.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Jetzt muss er, jetzt Bellingham setzt sich durch, geht alleine durch, spielt aber auf Haaland, Haaland, Haaland!
Tor! 45. Minute, 3-0.
All right, listener, joining us now on the line from Berlin is Christoph Biermann, reporter for magazine Elf Runde, and also award-winning football writer. Christoph, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Not at all, not at all. A lot, as ever, to talk about from the Bundesliga this weekend. You got another massive win for Dortmund, some pretty spicy post-game remarks from Erling Haaland, a Bayern bouncing back from their defeat to Gladbach a week ago to keep the gap at 6 points. Also, Union Berlin knocking on the door of the top four. Crikey, what do you want to hit us with?
Maybe we should talk about Erling Haaland first. I mean, you already said it. He made some remarks that surprised the bosses at Borussia Dortmund a bit. They pretended not to be too irritated about him saying that he felt under pressure. So he gave a post-match interview to Jan-Åge Fjørtoft for Norwegian TV. I think some of the listeners might remember Jan-Åge from his time with Swindon, Middlesbrough, Sheffield United and Barnsley, and he is now working for Norwegian TV, and he is always or very often around Borussia Dortmund games, and he was interviewing Haaland about his future. I think everybody wants to know what's going on with him, and then he was saying he felt a bit under pressure from Borussia Dortmund, and Borussia tried to play it down a bit, understandably, and but that's the big discussion. Will he stay? Will he go towards the end of the season? Who wants him? And so on.
I mean, it's been a talking point for a while. I kind of assumed he'd be moving on at the end of the season. And him taking this kind of position publicly suggests that's his thinking as well.
Yeah, he was saying that he needs to be kind of free in his head to play proper football. And I think that's very often the situation when players have the feeling or they need to decide about their future. He's a very young guy. Everybody is after him, and Borussia has to make their plans for the future. So if he's leaving in summer, they need a replacement and so on. So it's a bit of a complicated situation.
Fair enough. He scored a couple of goals, one of which was an absolute peach, with the assist there from Jude Bellingham and then lashed in by Erling. And Dortmund, as we mentioned, with a 5-1 win over Freiburg. That was on Friday. And then Bayern Munich, though, keeping Dortmund at bay with a 4-0 win over Köln. And I can only apologise for my pronunciation of that club. But 4-0 over Köln. With a hat-trick.
Who? Very good. Köln. Yep. It's almost perfect. Come on.
Christoph, tell him that, you know, when he makes a mistake, tell him.
Right.
No, it's Köln. It's great.
Wait so, until he says Bielefeld, you see.
We're not mentioning them this week. A hat-trick for Robert Lewandowski, that's how it's pronounced, who's now only the second player to score 300 Bundesliga goals ever after Gerd Müller. Of course. Bayern looking good in that game?
Yeah, they looked excellent. So, I mean, we're desperately waiting for something like a title race in Germany. So it's still only a 6-point gap between Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, but actually nobody here has the impression. Some of us at least have the hope that this gap will narrow over coming weeks, but nobody's expecting it. I mean, the defeat from Bayern against Borussia Mönchengladbach a week ago had to do with 13 players missing, and Nagelsmann had to bring on a 16-year-old player and so on. And even then, Bayern was pretty unlucky. And how good they are, you could see when they were playing in Cologne.
Mm. I noticed that Köln manager Stefan Baumgart actually got Manuel Neuer's shirt, and he did a swapsy with a Köln cap. That kind of thing is frowned on by some folk, but were people okay with the Köln manager getting Manuel Neuer's jersey?
Yeah, he's so popular in Cologne because he's a real character, and everybody in football loved these kind of styles, but especially in Cologne. They had some crazy managers over the years, Ewald Lien, for example, or Christoph Daum, and being all of them being a bit eccentric, and also Steffen Baumgart is a bit eccentric because he was not only wearing a Cologne hat, it was a kind of his special merchandise item. So it was produced for him, and you could buy it in the club shop, or you could buy it because actually it sold out. So very popular, and wow. So Manuel Neuer was very happy to get one of these rare things.
Brilliant stuff. All right, well, you're in Berlin, Christoph. So should we finish with a quick word on the extraordinary Union Berlin, who are now only goal difference outside the Champions League places after their 2-1 win away at Hoffenheim at the weekend?
I was talking to one of the members of the coaching staff and after the match and saying, you're on your way to the Champions League right now. Because at that time, Saturday before Leverkusen played on Sunday, they were even on fourth place. And he was saying, no, we don't even know how to write Champions League. And Urs Fischer, the head coach, is still saying, no, we're in a relegation fight. We need to get 40 points to avoid relegation. So that's their mind frame, actually. They looking pretty stable over the whole season. And interestingly, during the week, they sold one of their key players, Marvin Friedrich, defender, to Borussia Mönchengladbach, and you couldn't even feel it that one of these such an important player is not anymore with the team. So it's a terrific job that everybody is doing at Union Berlin right now.
Mm, their top scorer is away at the Cup of Nations at the moment.
Yes. And
this is a club that was in Bundesliga 5, a couple of seasons ago?
Yeah, it's only their third ever Bundesliga season at all. I mean, I was in the happy situation, or a lucky situation, that I followed them from inside for their first ever Bundesliga season to write a book about it. So I was traveling with the team, I was in with the team sessions and so on. So I think I have a very good impression how Urs Fischer and his team is working and how the club is. And they it's an interesting mix of fantastic managerial qualities they're having. There's a special atmosphere around the club, a very special tightness with everybody, with the supporters, with the players, with the staff, with the club around them, and they're getting better every season, astonishingly, although they are still have limited means if you compare them to the rest of the league. So normally, when you look at their finances, they should be in the lower third, but now they're in the top third. So for me, it's the team of the season.
Mm. Was there a bit of a vacuum for a successful club in Berlin, Christoph?
Don't tell that any Hertha supporter.
Right.
Union is a club that has its catchment area mainly in the east of Germany, in the east of Berlin, with this history, with this GDR history. And Hertha obviously is the big club playing in the Olympic Stadium. Now all the stadiums are more or less empty in Germany because of the COVID situation, but they have a stadium for 80,000 people. They have been champion, many years ago, but still. The club that should be great in Berlin historically and from the given circumstances is Hertha and not Union. And so what they are doing is even more surprisingly.
Hertha at the moment down in 13th place, only 4 points off the drop. So, yeah, interesting times those in Berlin. Christoph, thank you so much for all of that. And many, many thanks. We look forward to catching up with you again soon on the Totally Football Show.
Great. Cheers, bye.
Christoph Biermann, and you can read more of Christoph Biermann's thoughts on the Bundesliga, if you speak German, in Elf für Runde. Ha! Next up, we're off to Italy.
It's the Paddy Power Football Supporters Support Line. We're talking to Arsenal fan Dave about his New Year's resolutions. How's the 10,000 steps going, Dave?
Yeah, it's going great, thanks.
The 50 push-ups?
Every day.
And how about moaning less about Arsenal?
Oh, seriously, mate, we need to sign a new midfielder if we want top four. And don't get me started on Liverpool postponing that cup.
Being a football fan isn't always rewarding. But if it's rewards you're after, you can get money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power.
Pretty much online bet, but bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Min 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. T&C supply 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Midway through round 22, because it's Monday afternoon for us, listener, and you've got three big games coming up today, featuring Napoli, Milan, and Fiorentina, and Genoa. Genoa, who, oh my word, they did it, James. They killed Sheva.
They killed Bambi.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Genoa's history, they love sacking managers. However, they did change owners, and you thought, this isn't a club turning over a new leaf. They've given him a three-year contract. They promised that when it comes to the January transfer window, they'll recruit for a new system for him. And 2 weeks into the January transfer window, they've sacked him. Look, he was appointed... because they had a really difficult run of games coming up, and they believe that with Ukraine, he'd got results against superior sides, and that's exactly what Genoa needed at that time. However, it's, what, 9 league games, no wins, and I think as much as you can say, okay, Sheva, losing to Juventus, losing to Milan, losing to the top sides, that's fine. I think what did for him was losing to Spezia, who, yeah, I think a lot of people expected to maybe even finish bottom this season, because Vincenzo Italiano went to Fiorentina late in the summer, and they have a bunch of no-name players. And instead, that win was really important and kind of pulled them away. So Sheva already out. I don't think it helped that the new owners appointed a sporting director after appointing Sheva, who is now looks like he's going to be bringing in a German coach with Italian heritage, Bruno Labbadia on the basis that he's kept teams up in a short period of time before. But yeah, feel sorry for Sheva.
Of course. Genoa currently lying second last in Serie A, 6 points from safety. Their neighbours, Sampdoria, are only 4 points above the drop themselves in 15th place. And they also did their manager, Roberto D'Aversa, for the second time this season. The first time the owner kind of went back on it. You told us that story before. And this weekend, was something similar happening? Because the word came out that D'Aversa had been fired, but then they couldn't reach an agreement with his successor. So now where do we stand with Sampdoria?
Well, this also happened just down the road in Spezia as well, in that Spezia, who their sporting director used to be at Samp, basically thought, oh, we used to have Marco Giampaolo. He was a good coach when it came to developing young players, just not at Milan, just not at Torino, but it worked for him at Sampdoria. Let's try and appoint him because the players don't get on with Thiago Motta, and they couldn't reach an agreement, and so Thiago Motta stayed in charge. And, you know, at Samp over the last weekend, it's, oh, shall we get Giampaolo in until the end of the season, then maybe give him an option? I think he's still on the payroll at Torino, but poor old D'Aversa, who's, as we mentioned before, knows that, you know, the club interviewed Dejan Stankovic in the past, and they've been talking to Giampaolo now. I mean, it's not a great show of confidence in your work.
Indeed not. All right, so dark times in Genoa. Up at the top of the table, meanwhile, there's one of those kind of rarities in European football, an actual title race. By the time you hear this, Milan might well have retaken the lead from Inter. Inter had a 0-0 draw Sunday evening away at Atalanta. Milan, who are currently 2 points behind them, will be playing against that Spezia side Monday afternoon. Bologna also taking on Napoli, who are third currently. And Fiorentina, meanwhile, as mentioned a bit later on, will be up against Genoa. What about Atalanta's goalless draw with Inter interrupting the Nerazzurri's, or Simone Inzaghi's side, 8-match winning streak in Serie A?
Yeah, and they'd scored in, I think, their last 39 games as well. I think what was interesting about this game was that Atalanta changed how they, not how they play, but their setup. You know, they were playing a kind of 4-1-4-1 rather than 3-4-2-1, you know, where they usually have a couple of playmakers behind Zapata or Muriel. Instead, they had, you know, kind of a line of four central midfield players and then another midfield player behind them. You know, as much as you could point to that and say that was a reason why we didn't have any goals, the reason why we didn't have any goals was the two goalkeepers, Samir Handanovic and Juan Musa, who were excellent in keeping out Pasalic, keeping out D'Ambrosio right at the end.
Dzeko.
I think Dzeko did his own sort of to ensure that the game was 0-0, because I think most of his chances went over or wide. But, you know, I think this in the papers this morning in Italy, Monday morning, celebrated as a kind of a great game in the way that 0-0s were once celebrated. The perfect game. So balanced. But also, I think from a tactical point of view, there was a feeling that, yeah, these are the two, I think, along with Milan, best coach sides in the league. And there was lots of interchanges of position, fluidity. Inter's build-up play in phases was just very, very slick. Kind of the best of Serie A, even if it wasn't, I suppose, for people who like a lot of goals, the best spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, but people like that.
Who are they anyway?
Yeah. Who are they anyway? Yeah, no, but I think, you know, one for the aficionados. Milan, anyway, as I mentioned, with the chance to take a 1-point lead if they can win against Spezia on Monday. And it's really interesting because Milan's next two games are against Juventus next Sunday. And then after that, it's the derby with Inter. So, oh my word.
It's kind of just crazy that Serie A has decided to, we'll do a different calendar this year. And so all the big games are in January and early February, and like the end of the season, it's just going to be like, okay, Juventus Spezia.
Could be huge though, those matches. Those,
oh, no,
I quite like it because these games are big whenever you play them. But games like Inter Venezia can become huge at the end of the season. But January, maybe not so much. Anyway, any game with Venezia right now is huge because they've got Nani in. Nani, who signed for them last week. Tremendous move, this one. And immediately came on and set up an equaliser for the struggling Lagunas. TM James Horncastle.
I enjoyed you. That pun was intended. Nani being huge for them, correct? You know, Nani in Italian means dwarf.
Oh, small, yeah. Like a dwarf, right?
Yeah, smalls,
no,
yeah.
No. Like nanotech. No, that wasn't. That was just kind of...
But in Italy, there's often calls for... I mean, when he played for Lazio, they wanted him to wear the number 7 on the back of his shirt. So it's seven
right.
dwarfs, didn't
seven
it?
Seven dwarfs.
So,
right.
But yeah.
So bad.
So Venezia and their eclectic signings. They brought in Cuisance from Bayern. Sergio Romero in the winter when their goalkeepers were injured. He was a free agent. Yeah, it's just kind of quite interesting what's going on there. Mm. Okereke.
Okereke.
With the equaliser. And let's see what the rest of the transfer window holds. Eh?
Exactly. They're 2 points above the drop at the moment. Venezia in 17th place. Quick question to finish off for now then. Are Inter going to sign Dybala at the end of the season? Because they've kind of come out openly and talked about it now.
Well, Inter did come out and talk about it and saying, how dare you ask such a disrespectful question.
I thought Morata had said, no, did he not?
Well, there was a little bit of mischief in it. But,
okay.
I don't think it was him acknowledging or declaring that, yes, we are going to be making a move to São Paulo Dybala. However, of course, we are getting to the stage when clubs can talk to and even sign players who are reaching the end of their contract. I mean, Inter, for example, have already had Andrea Onana, the Ajax goalkeeper, over for a medical. Look, these reports about Inter came out linking them with Dybala, in part because there's some past precedent, but also because who played last midweek? Inter and Juventus in the Super Cup, and that what would make a bigger front page headline than Dybala going to Inter. I think at the moment the story is entirely between Dybala and Juventus and the apparent frostiness that there is after a lot of hard work had gone into coming to an agreement, one that satisfied Dybala. And it's taken a long time. I mean, even last year we were talking about it. His agent has been in Argentina, obviously hasn't been able to travel because of restrictions. He's not an agent in the first place. He's a used car salesman. And so that's held things up because, you know, you have to go through all these bureaucratic processes to show that you are, in fact, representing the player and you are qualified to do that. And then in the meantime, Paolo gets injured. And I think legitimately, Juventus look at it and say, okay, 10 million a year until 2026, you're 28, you missed a half of last season, you've missed a half of this season. Is this the best financial decision? So that's where we are. But obviously, a player who did look very much like he was staying at Juventus, there's now uncertainty. Who knows? Maybe Toronto will come in and decide.
Maybe.
I don't think they can do this because of designated player things, but... all of a sudden, it feels like Dybala is in play.
Wow, incredible. I'm just curious, though, whether that's about as bad a position, a starting point psychologically that you could have if you're negotiating with Juve and the Agnelli family, the biggest car manufacturers kind of around, and you're a used car salesman. I mean, how you must feel sitting down at the table with those people. Like, what the look in their eyes, really.
Or yeah. Use it to his advantage. Remember that year where I sold a million Fiat?
Yeah.
Just for you?
Yeah. Why don't we open up a Fiat car dealership in Cordoba, Argentina? You can run it. We'll send you all the Pandas, the Cinquecentos you need.
Right.
Let's just get this done.
Very nice. One question before we go. Sorry, Jules. And maybe you've got a take on this, an Alvaro too. I'd be curious. Ciro Immobile, back on top of the scoring charts in Italy. He scored 17 in 18 appearances, pretty good, no? So he's on course to become capocannoniere, top scorer in Italy for the fourth time. Put that in perspective, Beppe Signori only did it three times. Mark, how many times was Marco van Basten top scorer? I don't think more than three, was he? Anyway, but just even to be in that conversation, Ciro Immobile, no question, the numbers don't lie. The guy can score goals. But as I was saying to James on Sunday, most Italy fans live in dread of the thought of him leading the line for the Azzurri, say, for example, come the World Cup playoffs in March. Is Ciro Immobile any good? Just a quick straw poll. Alvaro.
I think he's good enough, but I don't think that he's a top striker. I wouldn't put him among... I'm sorry, I wouldn't
How does he score so many goals, though? That's what I can't work out.
Yeah, but, okay, maybe at league level, yeah, but I don't remember him having, like, a terrific night in the Champions League ever. Maybe last year in the group stage with Lazio, but it wasn't that big either. No, I don't think that he has been like the focal point in any big European night. So I would say that he's very consistent, yes, but he doesn't have the star material that some other players have. And on top of that, I think that he's a little bit limited when it comes to his technical ability.
Right.
My opinion.
There's certain clubs where he's been where he hasn't done anything at all.
Sevilla.
Yeah. And Dortmund, yeah. Torino and Lazio. Yeah. Jules, what do you think?
I think he's a great goal scorer. I think you can be a great goal scorer and don't have to be a world-class player as well. The two is different in terms of finishing and the eye for goal and the sense of goal and the awareness, what's around him and everything. I think he's wonderful. Maybe if he'd been in a club that played more in the Champions League and certainly with Lazio, there was limitations in the he can't play in the Champions League if the club doesn't qualify for it. I don't think when he played last season, for example, or the season before, was it? With Lazio in the Champions League, I don't think he looked like out of place at all.
Mm. But nine goals in 11 Champions League games from Dortmund and Lazio.
And I just think that we will never know had he joined a bigger club like a Juve or something like that, if he would have made the same similar numbers and stuff. But I think he has to be right now one of the best goal scorers, proper strikers in world football.
James?
Yeah, I agree. And the consistency to do it year on year. I think it's six straight years he's been in double figures. You think of some of the other strikers who've been in Serie A in that time, Cristiano Ronaldo, Romelu Lukaku, he's beaten them to Capocannonieri crowns. He's done it on a team that is not as good as those guys as well. Simone Inzaghi's Lazio, very well coached, had some interesting players, but not the supporting cast that Juventus gave Ronaldo or Inter gave Lukaku. And, I think players like this need to be celebrated because, you know, when you're at a club like that, which hadn't been in the Champions League since 2000, hadn't qualified for the knockout stages in 13 years, hadn't won anything for quite some time. He's been in a couple of cup finals, won the cup, he's won the Super Cup. And, yeah, you can turn your nose up at that, but that's ultimately beating Juventus and a good Juventus at that time. And 36 goals in a calendar year. Not in a calendar year, in a season.
I mean, the numbers, there's no arguing with them. And yet, if you see the team sheet for Italy's World Cup playoff and he's there in the starting lineup, how happy are you going to be about that? How worried are you going to be about that, James?
Well, exactly. I was more worried when he didn't start the World Cup qualifier games, which ultimately ended up with Italy not qualifying. So better to have him in the team than not, I would say.
All right, then. Well, there you go. That was our little chat. Maybe it could be a new feature, Hero or Zero. Ciro. If you've got a player...
None of them, really.
If you've got a player that you would like us to debate, and as long as their name rhymes with Hero or Zero, we can do that in future weeks. Sorry, Alvaro.
Hero or Ciro.
Hero or Ciro.
For me, he's not a Ciro. But Ciro hasn't shown the capacity to adapt to some other contexts. That's really important too.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Oliver.
Yeah, but I think he has. He won one of his Capocannonieri. He won when he was with Torino, right? Who got into Europe for the first time since the beginning of the 1990s.
Yeah.
He's done this now playing under lots of different coaches. Yeah, so Gian Piero Ventura, I mean, he's done it under Simone Inzaghi, and now he's done it under Maurizio Sarri. And Maurizio Sarri's completely changed the system away from playing, what, 3-5-2.
What do you think it is? Why is it people like me don't see it? Is it because he looks a bit slow, if you know what I mean? I mean, when you look at it, he doesn't look the bright. Is that what it is? He just looks a bit confused by life.
Isn't he like in a spark, a little bit?
Like, yeah,
some other strikers,
so,
like Ravanelli, for example, they weren't any better than him, but they
maybe
there,
that's
what
the difference is. Maybe between the greatest and really good players like him, some of the best at what they're doing, but maybe not thinking as much as others or not having the same intelligence or football IQ, maybe that's what makes the difference.
Maybe. Anyway, there you go. Next up, he's bided his time, he's bitten his tongue, and he's kept his counsel. Time for Julien Laurens to unleash some Ligue 1 on us.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
All right, PSG won after back-to-back draws. Got a win this time round over Brest. They're 11 points clear of Nice, Paris. 13 points clear of Marseille. In fourth place, who's this? Rennes.
Yeah.
And, oh my word, you mentioned it at the top. 6-0 victory over Bordeaux. Wow.
I mean, Bordeaux are shambles. They're exploding. But Rennes, who had gone through a bad patch, really, where they were not winning, they were not playing as good as they were between September, really, and beginning of November, when they had that incredible run of 13 games. I think they had 13 wins in a row at some point, beating PSG.
2-0,
but they looked really good.
Yeah.
And then I think they got a bit tired. The key players were not maybe as good as or efficient as before. But, wow, they came back so well at the weekend. Again, the fact that Bordeaux are imploding within is not helping them. They had a player sent off straight after the start of the second half, which didn't help again. And like I said, within the dressing room, there's a lot of things happening, like Laurent Koscielny being expelled from the first team, from the first team squad, from the dressing room. So there's so many things going wrong.
So what was behind that? Was that wages, or had he kind of refused to do something, or what was behind it?
No, he'd been injured, and they said that he was not doing his job as captain, that his attitude was not right. For example, there was a lot of rumours of how much he liked his wine and a bit too much. And I think the club used that against him, which he openly admits that he loves the
wine. I mean,
Bordeaux,
he's at Bordeaux.
Yeah, exactly. And if now and again with his family, he enjoys a dinner with good wine, doesn't mean he's a bad professional or that he doesn't want to do his job properly. But yeah, certainly the wages played a big part because he's on a lot of money and he was not playing because of his injuries. So I think maybe they felt, let's do something big within the dressing room that can get us like a bounce, for example. But that hasn't really worked out. It actually backfired. So they lost to Marseille, remember, for the first time in 44 years at home the weekend before. And now that 6-0 win, I don't know if Petkovic will stay in charge. It would cost them a lot of money to sack him after just 6 months in the job. But there's certainly a lot of things not working. Like you said in the intro, we've got Saint-Etienne and Bordeaux, two of the most historical clubs in the country, looking like they're going to go down.
Yeah. Of the six goals, I was particularly impressed by the free kick by Benjamin Bourigaud. And crikey, that's his fourth direct free kick in a row that he's scored on.
Yeah, he's very good at it. He's a bit like your Jeepers. James Ward-Prowse.
This was, and I hesitate to use probably the most famous free kick of recent footballing history. Well, one of them, the Roberto Carlos Le Tournoi strike. I mean, it's very much like that, this one here. Yeah, yeah. It goes way out and then swazzes its way back in.
It does, but he can hit them in very different ways. He's really good. He can play wide. He can play more centrally in midfield. He's a very hardworking player who has a lot of energy and runs a lot. And I think they needed that kind of performance from the whole team, and they were really up for it. I think they could smell blood, to be fair, before kickoff. And we saw again the Laborde and Terrier partnership being really good. We saw Guirassy coming on and scoring two goals. So Jeremy Doku as well, who started and did well. So yeah, they were really good and well helped by the fact that Bordeaux were atrocious.
Absolutely. All right. Also this weekend, Monaco, under their new manager Philippe Clement, got a 4-0 win over Clermont, which is almost, anyway, so there you go.
I was expecting the joke between Clement and Clermont, but I did not find one. It was good. It was good. Wissam Ben Yedder came on at halftime and was very good in the second half. He had COVID. He was not fully fit to start, but it's good. They could have scored easily 6 or 7. And I think you saw a little bit already of what Clermont is trying to do in terms of possession, the movement and all of that. So very, very positive win for them. And they keep climbing up in the table. The race for second to six should be quite interesting, really, because PSG are, I think, too far now for everybody, especially for Marseille, who still have a game in hand. But they dropped points against Lille in the big game on Sunday night, despite playing for an hour, 11 against 10. But in goal, I think Gerbich did a lot of good things for Lille, and that's how they kept the draw.
All right. Monaco, meanwhile, moving up to fifth place. Very nice. Clermont against Clermont. I was still trying to work on something with Ren and Stumpy for that Bordeaux game, but nothing. All right. Anything else we should know about Ligue 1, Jules?
Only Seko Fofana, who scored another amazing goal to give a win to Lens. I can't believe Burnley thought they could try and come and steal him from us just for 17 million euros as well. Come on, Burnley, you should know better. He's just amazing, and he's had an incredible last 10 days with winning goals there and there, fantastic strikes. And he's just an incredible player and still quite young. He's only 26 years old. He's got an amazing future. I can't believe, again, that Udinese let him go for 10 million. I can't believe that Lens were really the only one to go for him at that price. And now I can't believe only Burnley, really. After him, I expect much, much bigger clubs in the summer to try to come and get him.
Well, still a couple of weeks left in this January transfer window, of course. So we'll see if there are other moves for Fofana. But as it stands, there you go. We reached the end of today's Totally Football Show European Edition. Sure looks that way. Anything you guys want to add, Alvaro, James, Julien?
Is it tonight the FIFA Awards?
That's true. The best. But anyway, that's tonight, yeah.
Will they have an award called Hero or Churo? That's
TM, FIFA. That's TM. You can't touch that. That's totally. We can talk about it. Yes, that is Monday night and will have happened by the time anybody hears this, Jules, for what it's worth. We'll be back next Monday, Tuesday with another roundup of all the big stories around the continent. So make sure you join us for that, listener. For now, many thanks to Alvaro, James, to Julien, to Christophe earlier, and to producer Charlie, and yourself, why not? And we'll catch up with you in 7 days' time. Cheerio.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.